You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 21 September. Hello, Level 1. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Pierre Radenhuis looking at US and SA markets. The charts all looking weak, I think. Dean Nassersen from Glacier, we're talking timing the Rand and how not to try doing it when investing offshore. And Ian Lawrence, CEO from OneLogix, as they get their first decline in results in 11 years. This show is proudly sponsored by FMI, division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Data dump spills the beans on Mirror Trading International. And CNBC, Trump agrees to TikTok deal with Oracle and Walmart. And Judge Holt's Trump administration order banning WeChat. Morning markets. US was red on Friday. S&P down 1.1%. And NASDAQ down the same. Asia, we've got Sydney off 0.5%. Tokyo closed for Respect for the Aged Day. Gold, 1,961 as commodities are green. Rand, 1628. And top 40 opening call, looking for a red open, about 0.4% down.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Petri Radenhuis. He is from Herenia Capital Advisors. Petri, morning. Appreciate your time. U.S. markets, you've been looking at the chart side of the U.S., both NASDAQ and S&P. We spoke, just 2 weeks ago, and they were still sort of up at those levels, but they'd had some fairly aggressive selling days. 2 weeks on, those charts are looking weak.
Good morning, and thanks for having me. And yeah, so I think 2 weeks ago we chatted a little bit about how I'm not 100% sure what the 100% remember the topic of the conversation, but I think that at the time we were probably saying that it feels a little unrealistic how the market continues to go up. Now we're in an interesting sort of crossroads. We've had both of them pull back. The Nasdaq something like 10% in 2 or 3 days, which was relatively brutal, and then about a week or so of sideways, relatively volatile, but still sideways movement. And then at the end of last week, which is very interesting, we managed to break down below some of the short-term moving averages. So if you look at the 20-day and the 50-day moving average, both of which, both of those indices at least, closed below, in particular, the 50-day moving average. So Friday's action was relatively interesting because, yes, it did close below that level, but it did also close well over 1% off the lows in both indexes cases, right? So there's two sort of different signals there. One is kind of, we managed to bounce off the lows. The other one is, we've made intraday new lows, and it closed below a key level, which is that 50-day moving average. So I think from that perspective, it does feel a little bit as if, the market does have a little bit of downward momentum here. And we could potentially see another leg down. If you look at the NASDAQ, for example, let's say another equidistant leg down, it's maybe another 7 or 10 or so % down in the next week or so, would probably be, it's kind of the high probability scenario at this stage that we'd probably see that unfolding. And you'd have to then wonder, what's something like that driven by? And we could probably see a bit of a rotation out of some of these really overvalued and really hot stuff, cool, trendy kind of tech stocks that have done really, really well. And we could probably see, a logical explanation for me would be that if we have a movement of cash out of those stocks and into more traditional stocks, things like commodities, things like normal industrial businesses, just that rotation alone could perhaps even be enough to see those. The NASDAQ and the S&P 500 index pull back for a couple of days or a couple of weeks as the market just kind of rebalances portfolios and positioning from longer term guys.
If we turn to the local market, it's certainly trending down. I mean, early August was sort of like when it hit the highs for the year. Not as bad a looking a scenario playing out as we're seeing in the US in terms of lower lows, but still a market that has certainly been trending down for now, 6 weeks or so?
Yeah, and what is even more concerning, I think, on the local market is if you look at the recovery since the COVID lows, if I can call it that. Mm-hmm. We've really sort of gone on to retest, I wouldn't say the highs, but, you know, our market really did recover really well. And now it's starting to sort of roll over in this nice sort of multi-week rounding top situation where the market's just kind of, just that momentum has just died and downside is to come. And what's really going to be, I think, very ironic is that we're probably going to see a stronger rand over the next coming week again. Mm-hmm. So we'll probably see well-supported financials and financials and retailers. But our index is just so big and heavy on the industrial, and now as well starting to become a little bit more influenced by the gold price and how those companies, or the gold mining companies, are doing. So we could potentially see strong local markets, yet a weak index, if that makes sense, as the big heavyweights and the dualistic companies and the NASDAQ and the BTIs and you know, those massive big corporates of the world that are very influenced by the rand. You know, the weaker the rand, the better they do, because they earn most of the money out of South Africa. In a positive week for us, for the locals, we could see the big dual-listed and multinational businesses pull back, and that'd be bad for our index. So that's a bit of a bittersweet pill, I think, to swallow.
Yeah, I mean, a quick last question. I mean, you're actually suggesting the rand could actually get to, you know, and not this week necessarily, although our rand, man, it could do it by lunchtime, but you're suggesting 1550 is quite possible on our currency.
Yeah, so it's been ranging between, you know, two levels for quite some time, and we've been tracking that as well as the dollar index. And generally, what we've seen since, you know, since the onset of the lockdowns in March and all that kind of stuff, is that the dollar has actually weakened a lot. And that dollar weakness has obviously opened the door for lots of dollar strength. And obviously there's reasons for them weakening, right? They printed trillions of dollars, for mm-hmm. example, is one of the drivers there, right? So we've been sort of looking at this range on the dollar index also over the last couple of weeks, maybe 6 weeks or so, and thinking that, well, that will be indicative of which direction the rand will go. If we see a little bit of dollar strength coming back, we know that that's going to be bad for commodities. We know that's going to be bad for emerging markets. And we know that's going to be bad for the rand, right? And the opposite is true if the dollar sort of breaks the consolidation that it's in and continues to weaken. During the course of last week, we did not break this range on the dollar index, yet the rand strengthened and broke out of its range. So the thinking at this stage is that even if we just see continued sort of dollar weakness, as in it doesn't really get any weaker from here, but it stays where it is, or in this range, we could then continue to see rand strength.
Gotcha.
Right? Which will be very positive for us, because at the end of the day, you know, the dollar is kind of weak because people are taking risk. People are saying, well, look, we're happy to invest in higher debt. We're happy to invest in emerging markets, perhaps buy local banks in South Africa, for example. So that could be a bit of a driver for us. And the irony is that the underlying market could potentially, on our side at least, be doing okay, but because tech is having a bit of a meltdown, if you will, or a bad day, the whole world is going to look red. But
and then
that
our
doesn't
currency
necessarily mean we don't have fund flows coming into South Africa.
Yeah, money coming in, and certainly rand strength. We'll leave that there. Petri Radenhuis, founder, Herenia Capital Advisors. Appreciate your time.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Dean Denison, he's research and investment analyst, Sglacier by Sanlam. Dean, morning. Appreciate your time. A note you sent out last week. I mean, typically, you know, we're talking rand and people wanting to take their money offshore. The knee-jerk response, you know, rand blows out, we rush the money out. Data you pulled together says, you know, actually, in the shorter term, when the currency is blowing out, it could actually go either way. It could blow more, but it could equally so actually strengthen, and those knee-jerk responses are probably not the best for our investment wallets.
Yeah, exactly right, Simon. I mean, from the research that we've done within our team, you know, it sort of supports that message that a lot of market proponents or participants would be familiar with by now, that externalizing either directly or trying to just gain global access really should be a longer-term decision made for a variety of strategic reasons and not necessarily because investors fixated on the level of the rand. That's typically what we've seen That's generally the main factor that drives offshore investments. And from the work that we've done, looking back at the worst periods for the exchange rate in terms of depreciation mm-hmm. over the last 20 years or so, comparing that with subsequent returns after periods of appreciation for the rand, the subsequent 12-month returns really are pretty insignificant in terms of the difference. And in fact, over a subsequent 12-month period after really extreme periods of market depreciation, you actually would have been slightly better off had you just externalized at that point in time. So really supporting that idea, that it is incredibly difficult to time it on a short-term basis.
Yeah, and I mean, the essence, and you allude to it in your comment there, I mean, really, it's a case of have a strategy with the currency. I mean, mine is quite simple. Every quarter, I move some money, regardless of the levels. We take the view that on the long-term basis, the rand will depreciate, and I'm going to kind of try, ignore the short-term fluctuations because, trying to time the currency is useless. So really, have a core overlying strategy and stick to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly that point. It's to be expected that the rand would depreciate over time. It is theoretically a depreciating currency relative to your developed market currency. So we know that, even though there might recently have been a time of substantial rand weakness, history shows us that that over time the rand would continue to depreciate over a long term period, and the data actually shows that over a subsequent 5-year period, after the worst times for the local exchange rate, the return was in the region of 40%. So we know that that's a significant factor and a difficult one to try to mitigate if the only opportunity set you have at your disposal is the local one, which, as you would know, is an opportunity set that is shrinking by the year. Mm-hmm. Over the last 20 years or so, the local stock market has pretty much decreased by 40-50% in size, so that leaves investors with lower return.
Yeah, and the other issue, which I think we often forget, and I know I do sometimes, is that we're moving the currency and we're focusing on that, but there's the other side of the leg, which is actually we're going to be investing into something on the other side, we need to remember that actually we want that investment, and it's not just all about the currency, it's also going to be about the market that we're investing, whether it's onshore via an ETF or offshore in hard currency.
Yeah, exactly. And that speaks to that same point, the fact that the opportunities that we have at our disposal offshore is so much greater, and when we are actually making these investments, the idea is that you want to do it on a basis that takes your risk profile into account, and it's not necessarily just a case of, I think for most investors, it would probably be inappropriate to be investing all your funds into risk assets, which often is going to need to be the case if you actually want to try to offset the depreciation of the currency and invest just locally. A lot of the criticism of externalizing funds in the past has been that that a lot of the returns on the local market come from rand hedge counters, mm-hmm. Which is all good and well, but the fact remains that our index remains almost 10 times more concentrated than offshore markets. And it's really just speaking to that point that you've alluded to, that you're wanting to make sure that strategically the asset exposure is appropriate and that you're not exposing yourself unduly to that exchange rate depreciation over time.
Yeah, and massive diversification in offshore markets. Dean Denison, he's research and investment analyst, Glacier Basanlam. Appreciate the early morning. When you protect your monthly income against the risk of injury, illness and death, you protect your future and the impact you make on those around you. FMI has been protecting South Africans' income for over 25 years, constantly innovating to provide greater claim certainty and cover for more occupations than ever before. Make your impact, protect your income first. FMI, life done better. FMI, a division of Bidvest Life, is a licensed life insurer and authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Ian Lawrence, he is CEO of OneLogix. That results to year-end May revenue off 4%, headline earnings per share down 46%. The first time in 11 years, a profit decline from OneLogix. Ian, morning, appreciate your time. I imagine a very tough financial year that you were experiencing already, and then obviously pandemic arrived, 27 March with the lockdown. Were you able to operate during those lockdown months towards the end of your financial year?
Morning, Simon. Yeah, we got hit by a double whammy. And the answer is some of our businesses were deemed to be essential services, and they thankfully could continue. We estimate around about 80 to 90% of our normal capacity. But on the other end of the extreme, we have 12 separate businesses in our group. On the other end of the extreme, we have businesses that were literally trading at about 5% of their capacity. So we were affected across the board.
And in terms of, I mean, it's sort of the history of OneLogix, I suppose I should say, is vehicle deliveries. Those vehicles, trucks you see carrying fancy cars on the N3 as you drive to and from Durban and the like, I suppose down to Cape Town as well. The sales have collapsed. I mean, were you still operating? Are vehicles still moving or being moved even as we have vehicle sales under pressure?
Simon, yes. Just a quick point. Vehicle deliveries only account for about 28% of our revenue.
Okay, so that's small now.
Yeah, so we're in agriculture and liquid bulk. But the answer to your question is that during April, it virtually ground to a halt. And it started recovering slowly in May. And surprisingly, to where we are right now, it's recovered quite remarkably. We're not quite sure exactly how to explain it. And we're very happy about it, of course. But we literally did go through the doldrums to the extent. I mean, if you had a look at the NAMSA figures, you could virtually count the number of cars that were actually sold on the retail basis in April on your one hand.
Yeah.
That's the extent of the damage.
Yeah, I think it was like a dozen cars a day or something like that. You mentioned that the other side from vehicle, you've got Buffleshook, you've got Jackson, they're in the agricultural space. You've got your United Bulk, very much sort of repositioned the company as logistics, as the name suggests, rather than just that vehicle delivery, which remains just over a quarter there. How significant is your agricultural part becoming?
Well, interesting enough, agriculture, if you look at our results on a year-on-year basis, they showed an improvement. So in this difficult environment, they did show an improvement. And if you look subsequent to our year-end, they continued to improve. And that is not surprising, because if you have a look at the GDP figures, you'll see that obviously corroborates our experience. Agriculture is fairly healthy right now. And we see quite a big future for ourselves in that market segment. So we're looking quite closely at it, but it's been a happy experience for us, because we've expanded our exposure to the logistics markets so that we're not really at risk of one segment only.
You got the Umlaas Road Phase 3, which is again just outside Durban, vehicle storage. You've done the sale and lease back of that. That happened subsequent to the year end. That was on sense just in the last week or so. And that really is a sense of you've built the facility. And you're going to get the cash back for it. Will this then pay off the debt for it? In other words, sort of de-gear the balance sheet, frankly, quite significantly by my running of the numbers.
Yes, you're quite right, Simon. It's not only are we going to reduce that debt completely related to Umlaas, we're also going to sit with a fairly significant cash pile it's going to test our capital allocation abilities going forward. So we're in a reasonably happy position. We're going to de-gear substantially, and we're going to sit with a cash pile looking to invest to grow the business.
We'll leave that there. That's Ian Lawrence. He is CEO of OneLogix. Ian, really appreciate your early morning. That's it for today. You'll find us live every weekday morning, 6:30 a.m. at the MoneyWeb website or the MoneyWeb app. Podcast available from 7 a.m. again on the website or the app, or wherever you get your great podcasts from. Chat to us on the social media. Use the hashtag MoneyWebNow. This show was proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact. Protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. A massive thanks to my team, Eddie and Cordora, to you for listening, to my guests for their early morning time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.